Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to episode 177 of What Most People Think. And what a week we're in here. What a week. It's exactly what you want in the run-up to Christmas, isn't it? It strikes and snow. You know, that bit where you have to do loads of shit. The real, like, absolute pressure point of December. And it's been fucked hard. And what we get is this phenomenon of people. It always happens on snow days, is people saying that they can't get into work. And some people have legitimate reasons. That, you know, if your train is not going, you can't get there. But it did remind me, actually, of when I did office work a long time ago now, and there was like medium level snow one day, and this girl who always loved throwing a sickie anyway, she rang in and said to her line manager, I can't get in. You know, obviously she has to do the voice of when you're not coming into work, I can't get in. And he was like, Kelly, you know we live two streets down from each other. Oh, this is a legendary tale. Kelly, get on the central line and get in, stop being ridiculous. I mean, one thing I do remember from that is occasionally having to field those calls. And do people still do the sicky voice? You know, when people ring up and go, oh, yeah, just something about being ill has made me need to whisper. Yeah, I'm sick, but I'm also in a fucking library. There were several cliches, weren't there, which is I've been up half the night being sick. Oh, exactly half the night. Was it half the night being sick? That's a conveniently round number, isn't it? If it was half tonight, which half? Because if it was the first half, I think you're in recovery. Get yourself in. This is What Most People Think. This is a podcast. You know, comedy can be a bit like, hey, don't victim blame. You know what? I'm saying that there are a lot of fucking shirkers out there in Britain. There are. Be honest with yourself. Post-COVID, there's a lot of people that are still lingering with the idea that work is an occasional favour that they do society. And that really, that bit, that two-year bit, you know, that tiny percentage of their life when they were paid to sit on their fucking asses, that represents what life should be about. It's a solo episode this week. We've got a load of little things to catch up on. Obviously, there are the strikes and how that argument and that debate is sort of evolved and playing out in the public eye. And then we've got reactions to Harry and Meghan's documentary, which I had to watch for work. I probably would have watched it anyway. I mean, it's spoiler alert, I wasn't a fan. Let's leave it at that. And then, you know, with England having gone out of the World Cup last week, let's have a reflect on that. And also, got these fans that celebrate England going out. I mean, I sort of get the old rivalries, but I do think some of them take it too far. I would say this, right? If you're Irish, Scottish or Welsh, and you buy the replica shirt for games that England are playing against, and then you're kissing the badge of a country that you're not from because England lost to them. It really is. Have a look at yourself in the mirror. And what I do think is funny is I wonder if they buy like replica shirts for all the knockout games, because we actually won a reasonable number of knockout games recently. I wonder if they've got a secret cupboard of like Denmark, Senegal, Germany shirts that they never get out. Let's do the main talking point from last week's show. So we had John Holmes on the show, and it was a brilliant chat. And if you haven't caught up with that episode, do, because just in terms of talking about where the comedy industry is, it's a real deep dive on that. And John's got some great anecdotes about Well, I mean, his story about how he got the biggest fine ever in Radio Ofcom history is worth listening to itself. David refers back to radio comedy, and he says a little fact to justify his existence is the Shuttleworths is now become the longest running sitcom on radio, which has been made exclusively by the same bloke, Graham Fellows, and has been running since 1993. That's a good run. I mean, this is the thing, this world of radio comedy. I think if you are, look, if you're working class, there's a big bit of your life where you have no idea, literally no idea about the cultural impact of Radio 4. You just don't know it. I didn't know it. I didn't even know it for the first 10 years I was working in comedy. And then people just start talking about the news quiz and all this stuff. And you go, oh. And then you find out that, like, these shows have got 3 million listeners. So, there's these shows that have been running for ages. I mean, there are people in Middle England who would literally go on a sort of domestic terrorist campaign if the Archers was moved, right? I think they slightly changed the theme tune a few years back and they were all kicking off. So it's a matter of, and there is some great radio comedy out there. And like, as I said in the chat with John Holmes, their radio comedy does seem to be the one that's perhaps doing more than any other to get a diversity of opinions involved. New patrons. So if you're board member level, I've sent out reminders about the gifts because the big board member gift, I needed some information first before I can dispatch to you. Those are all getting dispatched now. Unfortunately, if you do get that information to me after this, it will have to be done in the new year, but you will still get them. There's going to be a Patreon only episode next week, and I will be doing, of course, the Mystic Jeff episode for everybody. Or the Christmas special is next week as well. Christmas special with Ramesh Ranganathan. Oh, fuck. The big announcement is, so this podcast is going up on Wednesday at 10 a.m. is I have a work in progress tour on sale now. It's on sale now from 10 a.m. Whenever you're listening to this, you can go on Live Nation. And what it is I'm building up for a tour in the autumn of 2023 and spring of 2024, but I need to make sure the shit works, right? So I'll have worked up material and I'm going to take it out on tour. It's going to be a bit cheaper. The tickets will be a bit cheaper than the normal tour. And that's to give me a bit of latitude when I have to pull out a note or look at my laptop. Or it's, you know, some of it is, I mean, look, the thing that you will hear is some of it where if my audience go, oh, that's a bit fucking rough, Jeff, you'll hear the stuff, the worst stuff, the most cancelable stuff if you come to the Work in Progress tour. I know from memory we've got dates in Guildford, Kingston, Darwin up north, we've got Stockport dates. So it's only 11 to 12 dates, so I've already had a lot of people saying, oh, why aren't you coming to... why aren't you coming to, you know, Shittington on the Vase or wherever? There will be a massive, massive amount of tour dates coming probably at the end of January. So, but the work in progress dates are on sale now. Go on Live Nation or look at my social medias. You'll find a link and see if one of them is coming near you. This is a message from one of my patrons, Nicholas Tall. He sent me a message saying it's his wife's, Sarah's 50th birthday on Wednesday the 14th of December. He says something there that I probably shouldn't read out. If you could say happy birthday. Of course, happy birthday to Sarah. It would make her day and save my bacon. And you love the episodes, especially the solo episodes. Well, thank you very much. As we always say, the solo episodes are one for the purists. And happy birthday, Sarah. We've got new board members, Stephen Hewitt and Matt Brakewell. You two sound like we've got some older board members, but you two sound like disruptors. Do you know what I mean? Stephen Hewitt. Like you'd have some kind of corporate record that would intimidate the other board members. Who have you heard about? Stephen and Matt guy. They come as a pair. Stephen and Matt, they did stuff in tech. What did they do in tech? They developed an app. What's the app for? Look, I don't know. They just do computer stuff, all right? And I'm scared. Okay? I'm 55, heading for 60. New talent frightens me. But Stephen and Matt, welcome to the board, gentlemen. You'll have had your message about your gift as well. Hewitt and Brakewell. I mean, that could be any kind of double act, wouldn't it? It'd be so, maybe like like two fellas that are in the Chemical Brothers. I don't know who they are, but that could easily be their names, right? Stephen Hewitt and Matt Brakewell. We got a VIP as well, although he is a returning VIP is Gareth Thomas, who I have presumed is Welsh, but I have no verification. Okay, let's do a quick thank you and a fuck you. The thank you is to the people of Belfast. I was there last, when was it? Thursday? Thursday, yeah, I was flew out there to Belfast to record an episode of the Blame Game, the Blame Game, which is available on iPlayer, and a lot of people have watched it for the first time. It's a funny show. It's got Neil Delamere, it's got brilliant host Tim McGarry, Diona Doherty, and Colin Murphy are the regulars, and they're so funny. And there's a lot of banter, but it's not kind of like that forced kind of like, oh, a bit of banter, ironic banter. It's kind of banter that you hear down the pub. And speaking of pubs, it's one of the things I love about Belfast, right? Is that you generally go out for a drink after a record, a couple of pints, and there's just atmosphere. Whatever pub I've ever been to in Belfast, you open the door and there's that noise. You know, I call it the word hubbub. I call it the pubbub. When you open the door, it's like, everyone's chatting. Do you know what I mean? It's lively. And you sort of think, fucking hell. I know that Northern Ireland has its own issues, like with alcohol problems compared to the rest of the UK, but fucking hell, I'd be an alcoholic if I lived in Northern Ireland. I'd want to be out. I want to be sampling that atmosphere every night. Just it always feels like an event. So I really enjoyed that, and there will be on the main tour, which will get announced at the end of January, as I say, there will be another Belfast date, because I've got to get back to that city and keep up my record, my 100% record of returning from Belfast a bit hungover. You know, it's a proud record. It's my honour. The honour that I do Belfast is that I arrive at the airport in need of a salty snack and a nap, really. And the fuck you goes to having a birthday in mid-December. It's the thing about birthdays in December is if you get close enough to Christmas, people are winding down, they can actually make a bit of time for you. You know, they might already have finished work. Say it happens between Christmas and New Year, you might have a chance. My birthday is the 16th of December, and honestly, it's not just that people don't have time. People are fucking angry with you. People are angry with you for having a birthday. And God, it's just a really bad time, Jeff. I'm just feeling. You know the word. I can understand like people who aren't fucking related to me saying that. Do you know the worst one who I had that from was my mum and dad. I mean, of all people. My mum and dad going, oh, gee, your birthday just falls at a really tough. You made me. I didn't even exist. Okay, let's get into chatting about a few subjects. Let's start off with a little bit of chat about the ongoing strikes. All right, so we got strikes happening. Royal Mail strikes. Got all sorts of strikes. But overall, I mean, what's interesting, just before we get into that, is the government performance. It's just not in the news as much. Strikes sort of exist a little bit outside of that because it's a kind of a bit split, isn't it? There are a lot of people who support the strikers and think they should be given exactly what they ask for. And there's a lot of people none of us are going to get those kind of pay rises. So it's not quite as clear cut. But in terms of the government performance, you know, there's this stuff about Michel Moan, the Scottish Tory peer. I was saying on the Blame Game about what a tabloid wet dream she is, because, you know, there's political scandal there with the money that may or may not have gone to her as a result of PPE contracts. But she looks the part and she's an underwear empress. So they get to kind of do it. We're covering politics, but here's six photos of Michelle in stockings. Hey, politics in the politics section. Michelle Moan. The Tory temptress, 36, 24, 36. You go, like, come on. Don't act like you're not delighted about this story. She's got an alliterative name. She looks glamorous. There's underwear. You can talk about bras. I mean, but, you know, there is a reckoning happening for that period of COVID. And that's what I said. I mean, I remember talking about it on the podcast at the time, is that I think a lot of people understand why the government wanted to act fast. There was this huge demand for PPE. There was a global shortage, but you wouldn't have thought that if you'd have watched any of the morning breakfast shows in this country. We were apparently the only ones suffering from it. So the government were doing everything they could to get people making PPE. The problem does seem to be that a lot of the people they got to make it were associated with people from the government. I mean, poor old Matt Hancock, the pressure he was under. I mean, he had two separate mates that both wanted the same £10 million contract. I mean, you have no idea the kind of pressure that case was operating. I mean, Matt Hancock now, he's sort of trying to make out that the COVID years were like, it was like, you don't understand, man. You weren't there. I was in Nam. It's like being in Nam. What, Cheltenham? There you go. A little gag there, a little gaggy gag. But the government performance as a whole does seem to have broadly stabilised. Like when you watch the opening of the news at 10, I don't know if you've seen this guy. What's his name? Tom Bradby. He fancies himself a bit, doesn't he? The way that geezer looks at the camera. I'm going to start the news in a weirdly conversational way. He just, why? Is that your thing, Tom? Is it? Hello, this is ITN News, and I bet you're thinking, don't bet. What the fuck? Show some dignity, man. Show some class. Talk like Trevor McDonald. That's how news is. The Hugh fella. Trevor or Hugh. I don't want to hear this fucking like, oh, you just walked into me doing some news. And he started with a headline the other day, and it just made me think just how far we've gone away from the ongoing clusterfuck of the Tory government. He said, is sexism endemic in the fire service? I was like, well, look, you know, it's a subject that needs talking about and being addressed. It's not the biggest opener you've had this year, is it? I mean, first up, in the fire service, what, that place that is overwhelmingly male? My first answer is going to be, yeah, probably a bit. There probably is a bit of sexism in anywhere that's got a overwhelmingly male workforce. But it just shows that how news outlets are having to cover different news. And we spoke about this on the podcast as well, was that you know, they were addicted to the teat of big news. And I wonder if that's an effect of like Twitter algorithm as well, because whatever Elon Musk has done, it makes it harder for one subject to just dominate like it has for most of the year. And however much they may claim it doesn't influence them, there's no doubt. Of all people, journalists are on Twitter more than fucking anybody because it makes their job more interesting and easier, right? So I wonder if we're starting to see the dismantling of that period where just one story would dominate for sort of 6 weeks at a time. But they'll look back on the Partygate days as the glory era, right? They loved the Partygate days when the news would start and old Tom Bradby, but is it me or are the government pricks? I mean, but Hunt and Sunak, the thing is, it's harder for them with Hunt and Sunak because they're like them, aren't they? They're much closer to how those people see the world. I mean, the centre left have got to be, I think, the least revolutionary wing of politics, right? They don't really want much to change at all. They're very static. You know, they like their institutions. The Tory party has enacted Brexit, which in itself is quite a radical thing, but you know, Labour experimented with a kind of radicalism under Corbyn, but it was too rich for the voters' taste. But the standard sort of new Labour default line is they are very heavily rooted in their institutions. And Hunt and Sunak are kind of, you know, Blairite type figures. You know what Hunt and Sunak remind me of? And I do them that order, in that order because that probably is the order of power and influence. Is they remind me of, you know, when you get administrators brought into a football club? You know, you see those men in suits just go in one day. The administrators, it'd be old Tom Bradby doing it. Hello, heard about these administrators? Check this out. I'm young. But you just see those guys going in with briefcases into a football club, you know, Luton Town. And the idea isn't that they're going to stop them getting relegated. It's just that they're going to stop them going out of business, right? You know, we've got the strikes going on. This is the big thing that is a potential hamstring for the government on one level. Because you've got to understand, not everyone is fully behind this strike action. Maybe more so with the nurses, maybe less so with the RMT. But it's not hard for the nurses, is it? I mean, it's important for these unions to keep a good level of public support. And for the nurses, I mean, everyone loves the nurses. It's a word, I mean, as a verb, to nurse. It's a lovely thing. If someone nurses you, oh, thanks. Thanks for the nursing. Nurses are either kind or sexy. I mean, they... They're like, you know, Puss in Boots in the Shrek film where he does the eyes and everyone goes, oh, that's how everyone feels about the nurses. So they made them. But even for them, I think the prospect of them striking, the public were perhaps surprised that this is a move that they're going to go to. And they made an offer to counter, you know, made a counter offer to the government to negotiate directly with ministers. And I think that that's a shrewd political move for the unions because they must know that they're not going to do that. It's not how it's done, you know. But it makes it look like, we tried to avoid the strike, but the government don't want to avoid the strikes. But I personally don't want ministers negotiating directly with unions because it's like, you know, it's like when the Bank of England weren't independent. It can be used politically. So it can be used politically in one of two ways. You know, you could have a future Labour health... Do you want a future Labour health secretary negotiating directly with the unions? They're just going to go, they said they wanted 19%. We've given them 19.5 and a Bentley. So, because they're nurses. We love the nurses. Britain's hardworking nurse. Although I say that, Wes Streeting, you know, a politician I've got a bit of time for on the Labour benches. He did an interview with The Telegraph in which he sort of hinted that he wasn't completely just going to buy the orthodoxy that the NHS is perfect. You know, the usual cliches people trot out about the NHS. And I mean, someone must have had a word with him because he stood up in the Commons and it was back to the usual things that Labour say about the unions. But I think he'd done his job, really. I think it's an important thing, certainly for me as a voter, for politicians to not act like they're just, you know, they're sort of bowing to the religion that is the NHS. Is we spend a lot compared to, you know, what we spend is a decent amount compared to other similar countries, and our outcomes aren't as good compared. So I need a political party that are brave enough to ask why the fuck that is. But do I want a future Labour health secretary negotiating directly with them? No, I don't. Equally, the Tories, on the eve of an election, you know, the old Tory, what is it? Rabbit out of the hat. They just put it, oh, we've held back those pay rises. Oh, is there an election? Yeah, we are giving the nurses 14%. We think it's time that Britain's nurses... I don't want politicians with that sort of power. And then Mick Lynch, there was an interview that sort of went a bit viral with him with Richard Madeley, which was him, what was it, bodying? He bodied Richard Madeley. You know, he's bodying everyone, Mick Lynch. He's like a boxer with sarcastic comments. But I've started to think with Mick Lynch, you know, I've enjoyed some of his stuff, but as I say, I think he's starting to fancy himself a little bit. There was something that he said to Richard Madeley that I think was a bit obnoxious. Richard Madeley was talking about the strikes that are occurring this week. So I think it's the 13th and 14th, and is it the 15th? The 16th and the 17th. So essentially, it just fucks this whole week. You know, a week where people are, you know, looking to go out, like going to Christmas shopping, you know, going places, not to mention people getting to and from work. And I guess that's the plan, right? And so Richard Madeley was saying about the effect on Christmas on businesses and restaurants and so on. And then Mick Lynch goes, well, I don't know when your Christmas starts, Richard. Mine starts on Christmas Eve. And I thought, oh, fuck off, Mick. You know what I mean? Like, that's just so, you know, the point that he's making is that this is the big week in terms of people's plans, organisation. And, you know, the RMT, you by all means explain why you've done it this week, but don't be a smug prick about it. I mean, I don't really want to be on the side where I'm sort of empathising with Richard Madeley, but, you know, and Richard Madeley did a very good job of making himself look like a sort of self-regarding prat as well. But I just think there's signs that Mick Lynch is starting to drink the old Kool-Aid. And why wouldn't he? Everyone's loving Mick, you know. He's got all the old liberal metropolitan elite. Oh, Mick, I mean, just that guy. You know, it just goes to show that working class white men can actually not be bastards. I mean, just... You know, him and Eddie Dempsey. Eddie Dempsey. What's that? Did somebody say Eddie Dempsey? And he said something the other day as well, Mick Lynch, that wound me up. There was a load of cameras being poked in his face after yet another set of talks had broke down. And it was someone who said, oh, Dave Smith, GB News. And he went, yeah, don't speak to old KGB News. He might not have said that exactly, but he's sort of like, he was sort of showboating. And I thought, all right, maybe some of the people who are your members might, you know, I think it's a bit dodgy to completely dismiss them as a news outlet. And then it turned out that he'd done an interview with GB News a couple of days previously with Paul Embury. So don't give it all that, Mick. You know what I mean? Just because you've got the cameras there, and you think, oh, opportunity for another little Mick Lynch zinger here. I mean, he's a funny and he's a bright guy, but I guess it's inevitable that if you've been lauded by enough kind of sort of centre-left columnists and you know, people in the world of political discourse, that you would start to believe your own press. It was just that comment in particular about Christmas Eve. I thought, all right, you've taken your strike action. I'm open to hearing the reasons. But don't fucking essentially kind of like take the piss. Okay, just to remind you, yes, I mean, those work in progress tickets, if you're struggling for a present idea for somebody, you've got to admit, at this point, especially with rail strikes, it's one of those ones that's quite easy to do in it. All the presents I get from now on, I want to be stuff that I can do by typing stuff on a phone or device. So there you go, you got that. And I mean, the only thing is you might have to then print it out to put it in a card, and that is a ball ache. But yeah, the tickets are available from now, so go on Live Nation or wherever my social media is posted, and you will find the links. A couple of new Patreons here. Charles Wilsden. That sounds... I don't know, something about your... Have I got that wrong? Have I put in Wills... Is it just like Wilson? Hang about. Charles Wilsden. Because Charles Wilsden sounds like a... like a guy who's in hiding for tax reasons. No, Charles Wilsdon. Charles Wilsdon, that is not your name. You're one of those posh blokes. You're one of those posh blokes that did a bit of fraud, I reckon. Did a five stretch. Charles Wilsdon. You know there was those guys in the 60s? Those high society guys that were knocking around in the craze. I reckon you're like a guy like that. You know, you're a bit of the black sheep of the family, got into some dodgy deals, started running Charlie through Maltese gangsters. And you were actually called Charles Wilsdon, but you came out of prison and just put a D in there and thought, nobody will know the true identity of Charles Wilsdon. I mean, Wilsdon. We've got Linda Smith Blaine. So we've got double-barreled name, obviously. Thoughts and prayers to the man that had to compromise there. But, you know, there's loads of reasons why people have double-barreled names. What I'm wondering is, Linda Blaine is a very cool name. So I'm wondering whether you were... So if you were Linda Smith and his name was Blaine, if I was you, just because I'm a big fan of cool names, I would have gone, oh, I'm just going to call myself Linda Blaine now. But maybe you were Linda Blaine and you didn't want to change. There was a big old row and you was like, I'll tag on Smith, but I'm keeping the Blaine. But does that scan? Yeah, Linda Smith Blaine? Linda Blaine Smith? I mean, Linda Blaine Smith sounds like a writer, like she wrote a Marvel film. From Linda Blaine Smith comes shoehorned in female superhero. Marvel got so far, didn't they, with it only being blokes? And like, oh, fuck. We need to have a female superhero. Let's have Captain Marvel, but a woman. We've got Ant-Man. Let's have Wasp Woman. We've got Iron Man, Iron Girl. Oh, no, that sounds sexist, doesn't it? Iron In Girl. Let's steer clear of that. Just a quick reminder as well, I am on Instagram. I've passed the... I know I talk about TikTok, but I'm... TikTok? TikTok? God, how much does that sound like some old fart there? That happens now with my son. You know, he's into all these YouTuber influencers. And I've realised that is my job as a dad to do dad jokes and just get stuff wrong. So there's this guy that he likes called Preston. I always call him Prenton. You know, he knows that I know that it's wrong. But, you know, it's part of being a dad. I did actually, just before we move on, I did a dad joke par excellence the other day. We went for a Sunday lunch. We went in the pub and just as we were sitting with the waitress said to my son, who's 6 and a half, she said, I'll get you some crayons. And I went, yeah, and can you get some for my son as well? Hey, top dad joke there. And my son, he pulled the face. It's the first time I've ever seen him fully pull the your fucking lame face, dad. But that's my job. That is part of the job of the dad gag, is to fall on your comedic grenade. And it's not the joke that gets the laugh. It's the fact that you're willing to make yourself look silly just to raise a smile among your loved ones. All right, speaking of weird family stuff, let's talk about Harry and Meghan. So the Harry and Meghan much-trailed Netflix documentary is out. It's out and it is shit. All right, let's dial back a bit. Harry and Meghan, right? So these trailers come out and it's like, I've never seen anything like this for a royal documentary. You know, when you think about the Channel 5 ones, that are just so gentle, aren't they? Just let's enjoy the royal family together. The royal family at Balmoral. The royal family during the wars. The royal family playing croquet over the years. And this one is like, fucking the royal family will end. I mean, it's a trailer like it is for a film and they've got these... little sound bites coming out of it, one of which was Harry saying, there's a hierarchy in this family. Oh, what? Really? In a royal family, there's a hierarchy? Harry, fucking, you are dropping bombs tonight, son. What else are you going to tell us, eh? You got, as you said, the British used to have an empire as well. Don't know if you heard about that. Oh, what? And then there's other sound bites as well. It's time for us to tell our story. Oh, yeah, finally. It really would finally be time to hear your story, guys, because we haven't heard any of that. You've been doing nothing but tell your story. They've told so many of their stories, right, that at some point Harry is going to go, fuck, I'm out of stories. And he'll have to, like, rejoin the Royals on loan. Or like a Bosman. He'll be out of contract with Netflix. He'll rejoin the Royals, do a couple of years back on the balcony, a bit of waving. He'll be just waiting, right, because someone just say something bigoted now, because... Netflix, we need to feed the beast. Anyone? Even if you just call me a ginger, that'll do. That'd say something about my kid? No? But babe, I'm going to have to stay in the royal family another year. No one said anything. They're all, weirdly, terrified of us. And but like I'm gonna watch this. I had to watch. Oh, the other thing at the beginning as well was that there was a lot of pianos. I don't know if you've seen episode one. It's just piano, piano, piano. It's so hard. Piano, piano, piano. People don't know what it's like to be us. Piano, piano, piano. Oh, fuck off. We've had a European war this year. You know what I mean? We left Afghanistan in the shitter. You know, there's a cost of living crisis. And these two pricks, oh, they took away our security policeman. Fuck off. Honestly. I mean, I tried to watch it, right? I tried to watch it. And it was just so nauseating. It's so nauseating. I mean, they're like an alpha couple telling you how they met. You know when you go and see a couple and they have that well-rehearsed way of saying, well, so this is how we got together. So I was just, you know, single, just a girl in the world. I saw this girl. Oh, this is so vomit-inducing. I can't believe it. Because I'll tell you what, when I saw those two on Oprah, I was surprised that I didn't dislike it that much. I actually thought, you know, they do seem very much in love and, you know, I didn't feel as much antipathy as I expected that I might. But the way this has been done, and I know it's not just to do with them and it's about making a TV show, but the sickly sweet way that this is done, it's a hard watch, I tell you. And there's other things that make it a hard watch too. Like, you know, this extended curtsy that Meghan does where she talks about meeting the Queen, and then she was surprised to find out that she would have to do a curtsy to the Queen, and she does this pretend curtsy, but it's so sarcastic and prolonged that you even see Harry looking at her going, all right, babe, that'll do, babe, why don't you neck it, babe, yeah, maybe dial it down a notch, Megs, but you know, you can think it's silly, but you're married into it, all right, and please stop with this bullshit that you didn't know about all this stuff. They're all about the royal family and how it operates. Oh, Harry, Prince who? Royal family who? Buckingham what? Buckingham what? Sandry how? What? What's this? They have a royal family in it? Please, Meghan. Because there's some stuff that I can empathise with. You know, when they talk about, I do think that there were certain tabloids. I think that the public, by and almost overwhelmingly, race didn't come into it with them. If you think about how much people celebrated their wedding day. It was such a positive day, man. It really felt like a moment for modern Britain. But yeah, I've got some time for the idea that in the coverage of them as a couple, there were certain columnists, the way they spoke about Meghan, I thought, you are bringing race into it. It does seem to be an issue for you. So like, all right, talk about that. But this bullshit that she somehow didn't know what the royal family was. Come on, we've all seen King Ralph. And Harry, you know, bless him, the way he looks at her, you can just see this geezer is loved up beyond belief. I mean, everyone, I mean, I had a bit on the last tour that I did about this, but he's like that guy that you see where, you know, not only does he fall in love with a woman, he starts using the same words that she does. You know, if she's vegan, he goes vegan. And then one day he turns up going out for a pint. You finally peel him away on his own and he's basically, she's dressed him for the evening and given him a curfew. He's that guy. And you can call me sexist for implying that she exerts that level of control over him. But we all know this from our own lives. We're not stupid. We can see the kind of relationship that it is. And I think there's probably loads of things that she's done for him that is healthy. And maybe reflecting on being in such a fucking weird family is no bad thing. But also, she's not stupid, right? So she said, oh, well, we're going to move to Canada. We're going to just live a private... Oh, we've done the Canada thing. Well, we've only been here 3 months. Should we just move to LA? I mean, like, just because it's warmer, definitely nothing to do with the TV and film type opportunities that exist in LA. And then, of course, you know, you have the dialogue that then emerges out of it, which is that people draw a line, and the line is that criticism of Meghan is racist. And then they go, oh, go on, I dare you. I dare you to step over this line. Say something about Meghan. And you go, for me, race has never been the issue. Well, I mean, look, xenophobia might, because she's American. And the biggest thing I have against her is that she's an actress. I just do not trust actresses. And I'm sorry, this might seem small-minded to me, but women are already blessed with greater intuition than men and ability to work situations. You throw in at also being able to pretend that you're feeling emotions, you know, to a level where you could win, like, you know, an NTA. I mean, she wouldn't win more than that, but, you know, so she might have got an award for Suits or something. I'm sorry. I'm deeply... There's two people I am suspicious of in the world is magicians and actors, all right? And then actresses. I tell you something. If you ever show me a female magician, I will run out of the fucking room. Let's do have a quick catch up on the football. So I was, England. How did we do? We did all right in the group stage. Scored a lot of goals. Then we beat Senegal quite comfortably. And I don't know. I don't think anyone had got to that fever pitch of, oh, it's coming up. You know, it wasn't like 2018 or indeed the Euros. But we seem to be playing very well in patches. But at no point did I think that we were definitely going to beat the French. And they have that weird situation whereby the media try and trump it up into this rivalry. But I don't know about you. I've never really felt that with the French. I mean, I know that there's this historical thing and stuff. I just don't know enough French people. You know, it's not for a rivalry to really work. You've got to have loads of people at work that annoy you, that come from that place. But yeah, most people don't have that. And all the French people I meet are generally really cool. It doesn't exist on that level. Maybe it's because the people that write newspapers are always to and from France and they harbour all these resentments, maybe think that the French are culturally superior to them and they're intimidated by their cuisine. So for them, it's like, right, let's stick it up the froggies. And I haven't in my life heard that used as a sort of a racial epithet. It's just not a thing. So and also the French team, I mean, in the past they've had some fairly arrogant players, but they're pleasingly devoid of arseholes at the moment. And also the England team too. They just seem like two squads of fairly decent blokes. And I was out. I had some gigs that I was doing, which I couldn't pull out of. I had three separate gigs. So London on Friday night was mental because it was, given that the World Cup was in December, you had like a once-in-a-lifetime mix of tourists, Christmas shoppers and football fans. And Morocco had won earlier in the day and it's become a feature of Morocco winning that a lot of Moroccan expats are driving around beeping their horns. And I absolutely love that. I mean, maybe the beeping of the horns weren't Moroccan fans. Maybe it's just Christmas shoppers that are really, really buzzing that they got the last, piece of exclusive Harry Potter Lego. But the beeping, the Morocco fans were getting a bit, I think they were like letting off random fireworks in Leicester Square. So it was getting a bit leery, but I think it kept on the right side. And so I was following the match in the green room, the sort of dressing room at the gig. And it was funny because the people that had come to the gig, they were either a mix of tourists who just didn't get it or people, English people that didn't like football. But there was also a fair share of blokes who'd evidently been bought against their will and were just slouching their way into the venue and sulking and checking their phone like a teenager that's going on his last ever family holiday. Just, oh my God, it's embarrassing. I'm missing the football, dear. I'm missing the football. And so there was this air of distraction in the gig, and then me and the compere were sort of keeping each other up to date as we passed each other on stage. It was a really unusual thing to do. And then it got into the second half. I was doing the second gig, and I've been watching backstage again, and then England got the penalty, and the compere was building up to bringing me on, and he was just doing, keep your phone. So I knew that I was going on soon, but it could still be a minute or so, and then Declan Rice got barged over. The referee, I don't know what he's got against the English. And I know that a lot of people are saying, what are you saying? Still give you two penalties, Lee. But two penalties that were the most stonewall penalties ever. And the second one, it was almost like we had to beat that penalty out of him like a fucking confession. He just did what he was like, looking at those replays, thinking, I really hope this technology glitches. I do not want to give these pricks another penalty, but I guess I'm going to have to. And so it was building up. Kane had the ball on the spot and I could hear him building up. And then he runs up and he just skies it. And literally 10 seconds later, the compere goes, please welcome to stage Jeff Norcar. And I went on and I've never felt so scrambled emotionally in my life on stage. I didn't know. I could tell that there were men in the room that knew or getting like text alerts or WhatsApp alerts from their mates. Because that's what you do as a bloke, wouldn't it? Could people keep me updated, yeah? Because then if you're looking at WhatsApp, your missus go, are you looking at the football? You go, no, babe, one of my mates, his missus has sprained her ankle. I'm disgusted that you would think of me in that way. And there were tuts and sighs and stuff. And so there was this period where I was on stage for the first 5 minutes where the game was evidently still in the balance. And then I heard this noise, which meant that the final whistle had gone, or that, people just reacting to my comedy. That's not the first time that happened. That would have happened. But then the gig got a lot better. And immediately people needed a laugh. But it was one of the stranger nights I've ever had, you know, involving comedy and football, and this thing of a World Cup in December, it has been very, very strange. And I don't know if anybody saw it. I had a tweet go viral last week, which was the, you know, the guy that they showed on the screen with that really distinctive face. And I said, and he was holding a World Cup and smiling. He sort of looked a bit like Steve McLaren, Cilla Black, and a mixture of those masks that the Thieves wear in Point Break. But I said, this guy looks like a Photoshop of about five different people. It's the biggest ever tweet that I've had. And I know that sounds like a minor thing, but there was 7 million people saw it. And it just goes to show that as much as, you know, you think that politics and all this culture war stuff is what engages people, football, the ability of football to reach an audience is beyond anything. I even got followed off the former Liverpool midfielder, Didi Harman. And I really wanted to say to people, I was like, look, I'm not really like, you know, politics. You know, football content isn't fully my thing. It's more of a politics thing. But yeah, and then this guy's become a bit of a sort of national treasure because he just looks like such a nice bloke as well, and he's having a great time. And if you want to give him a follow on Instagram, as you're following me, by the way, on Instagram, where I've finally passed 10,000 followers there, do give that guy a follow. And so, yeah, I mean, look, England are out of the World Cup. I know my Scottish, Irish and Welsh listeners, not all of them will be delighted about that. A lot of them have settled in England, or, you know, I don't think it is exactly like it used to be. But I know that, I mean, I saw the video clips of, you know, like Scottish pubs and stuff when Kane missed the penalty. And it, I don't know what to do, because I feel like Scottish people would want me to be annoyed by that. But most of me finds it quite funny, and it's almost like we're doing an honour to the rivalry of the past by keeping it going. But like I say, it's the same with the replica shirts. Some guys have got too much into it. I mean, I think you can celebrate that, but if you're like standing in front of the screen giving it the big eyes, you know, like fucking Hulk Hogan, I think you might have got a bit lost in it, because I mean, there's sort of like schadenfreude, and then there's trying to live vicariously through the French. Okay, that is the end of this week's podcast. We don't have any letters this week. If you want to react to anything in the podcast, remember, I will address some of them. I've got Ramesh Ranganathan on next week, so let's put out an appeal here. I only want letters, and this is emails to whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. And I only want personal problems, right? Is there anything that you're worried about with Christmas coming up, spending time with the relatives? Have you got a weird relative, always acts strange, you know what I mean? One that smells a bit funny. Yeah, you know, I don't mean like a relative with bad breath, but you know, some of the older ones, they have a certain aroma. Is it the mothballs? I don't know. You know, old ladies smelling a lavender, that kind of thing. Has your wife offered that you'll sleep in the front room or something like that? Are you going to be a bit like Clark Griswold, Chevy Chase? Because it's going to be a Christmassy episode next week. So do any like dilemmas or problems or things that you want raised about Christmas for me and Ramesh to talk about is whatmostpeoplethinkuk @gmail.com. And patrons listening, obviously patrons will always get priority. Do send me any messages on that subject. It just remains, I made a desperate appeal for ratings on iTunes last week. And by God, 7 of you responded. So here are some of the 5-star reviews. 5 stars only, please. This is from Lazy Clown. Quality weekly show which doesn't shy away from anything. Politics covered without the boredom. Best comedy podcast, boy a mile. Solil. I changed to a Solil accent there at the end because I just saw it. Solil. I've always toured in Solil. I'm very big in Solil. That might be the worst fucking brag I've ever done in my life. More Jeff, please. This is from Steve. Great discussion and thought-provoking news and views. Loves the guests as well. That's from Val and Steve. Val and Steve. What a solid sort of old-fashioned name of a couple. You have Val and Steve coming. Oh, I love Val and Steve. Val, oh, when she's at the fizzy, she is a riotous. She's hilarious. She's outrageous. Val, you want to keep her away from that fucking Quantro. This is from Saturday from Barwella. My dad told me to give 5 stars so Jeff can get better guests. I don't listen to the podcast, but I've read Jeff's book. Well, that's very sweet of you doing what your dad wanted. And it also suggests to me your dad is a complete technophobe. Get on the old fucking iTunes. Send him a letter. You've got to send a review in to the iTunes. It doesn't work like that, Dad. Just get the address of iTunes, boy, and do it. This is from Alex Andra. Listens from the start. Great variety of guests. Manages the conversation as well. Enjoys the solo episodes too. Thank you very much. This is from Kieran Taihi. Have enjoyed Jeff's work on radio and TV, but I'm new to his podcast. Really enjoyed Al Murray, Catherine Ryan and John Holmes episodes. Yeah, what a great run that was of guests. In the new year, I'm thinking Phil Wang is going to do it as well, so I'm excited about that. This is from a collection of letters. Like it more fake ads, please. Oh, yeah, the fake ads. So, I mean, one of the running things on this podcast is that it's weekly and ad-free. This is what the patrons do. And if you think that's a good thing and you want to support it, join the patrons, which means that you won't have something coming up like this. I just want to say, with Christmas coming up, I've really, really been struggling as to which mince pies to get. And there's this incredible range of new vegan mince pies from, I don't even know if mince pies weren't vegan, but there's vegan mince pies and they're called mince lies. And you know, like bacon and bacon. It's just, the great thing about mince lies is that they're low in calories and so they must have something in them. Otherwise, why would you want to fucking eat them? But mince lies are just, they're what my family will be eating this Christmas. Mince lies. Did that seem conversational enough? We've got Richard Knowles in Sheffield. All right, Sheffield, not only do you have Jeff's humour and reflections on politics and life in general, but also a great benefit of listening to his interviews with a great variety of interesting guests. He's brilliant on the podcast and certainly well worth seeing. Oh, we got more of you. We had a lot of reviews. Thanks, folks. Discovered the podcast after watching Jeff on Countdown. I didn't realise it. I realise that assumes I'm old, stuck in an armchair and smell of piss. It does a bit. The podcast is very random, entertaining and does not take any topic too seriously. And it's another five stew from Mara Mara. Yes, love this podcast. Jeff is actually funny and his guests are pretty varied and always interesting. My only complaint would be the audio settings. Yeah, I'm trying to get it up louder. That's a fair shout. I will do that. So those are the recent 5-star reviews. Thank you to all of you guys. As I say, next week is the Christmas special. That'll be going up. I think it might be going up a little bit later. It might be Thursday or Friday. But have a great week. I hope that you get to Christmas shopping, doing, you know, I hope you somehow fucking Uber your way to your Christmas party, or if you just walk, do you know what I mean? Just walk to your office, do. Just get pissed, find a way, beat the strikes, cross the picket line, and get drunk. This has been What Most People Think. I'll see you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.